Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, crate training, summer safety for cats, and some budget-friendly tips for dogs you might not have thought of. We will start with something from Modern Dog magazine, A Trainer's Truth About Crates by Jennifer Messer. Prison or cozy retreat? It all depends on perspective and how you use the crate. Dogs have a natural denning instinct, normally preferring safe, enclosed quarters for their naps. In the wild, a den is a secure place to get some shut-eye without becoming someone else's meal. If a dog is properly introduced to a crate as a young pup, he will view it as a safe refuge from the hustle and bustle of the house and away from any pesky children. A place for peace and quiet and serious snoozing. When wild dogs aren't looking for food, trying to mate, or taking care of young, they are resting up to save energy for those life-sustaining activities. Most domestic dog owners are surprised to learn that wild dogs spend up to 16 hours a day sleeping. Rest periods in snug quarters are a natural part of caring for our dog's needs. But dogs have many other needs that crates interfere with. Dogs are social animals. They require interaction with other dogs or people. They also need exercise, mental stimulation, and appropriate potty opportunities. So while some time spent in a crate is usually a positive element of dog rearing, too much time spent in a crate can have disastrous consequences. Choosing a crate. Crates come in a variety of sizes and materials. The two most common models are plastic, such as those required for airplane transport, and collapsible metal wire crates. Provided they are of adequate size, either model will serve equally well as dual-purpose den and training tool. The bottom can be covered with a blanket or thick towel for warmth and comfort. Fleece-covered foam dog beds make for an even cozier cave, but can only be used with a non-destructive type. Piranha puppies will make a mess out of them. Plastic crates are often preferable for small breeds since they are compact enough to use in the car and can be opened. Most models split into a top and bottom half and used as snug, high-sided doggy beds once the little one is fully house-trained. Collapsible metal crates are often more practical for large breeds since they can more easily be sectioned off into appropriately sized spaces during house training and are easier to store. But if you ever plan to travel by air with your dog, you will need an approved hard-sided plastic crate regardless. A great metal crate we found is the Revel from Diggs, which collapses easily, has a puppy divider for smaller dogs, and, most importantly, a removable bottom tray because no one likes to spend their vacation dealing with a difficult mess. Any small safe space, such as a beanbag chair tucked away in a corner with a low ceiling or a comfy duvet bunched up between your desk and the wall, can function as a cozy den for the fully house-trained dog with no behavioral issues necessitating confinement when unsupervised. The crate is a house-training tool. Crates are virtually essential for any dog that isn't yet house-trained. When of appropriate size, it serves as a comfortable den-like bedroom, something almost all dogs naturally want to keep free of urine and feces. Any crate you use for whatever purposes must always be large enough for the puppy or dog to stand up without having to hunch, to lie on his side with legs outstretched, and turn around with ease. But a crate used for house training should be no bigger than this, or the dog will have space enough for both a bedroom and a bathroom. If the crate is of the right size, the dog is pretty well guaranteed to want to take a pee, and maybe a poop as well, when he comes out. So, a swift trip outdoors will give him the opportunity to practice doing his business in the right place. In turn, this gives you the opportunity to congratulate him with a walk, game, or treat. The perfect house training scenario. Used properly, a crate can theoretically lead to a puppy never having an accident in the house. For older dogs who may have poor bladder control, make sure you cover your crate mat or bed with an easy-to-clean cover to protect against mold and ensure the crate is always a clean and comfortable space for your dog to be in. The crate as chew toy habit facilitator. Chew toy habit facilitator. Chew toy, not shoe toy, fixations are good, and the crate is a fabulous tool for turning any dog into a chew toy addict. A food-stuffed chew toy, such as a Kong or a Nylabone with some drilled holes filled with wet dog food, low-fat cream cheese, or any other wholesome filling, or a filled kibble dispenser will keep a pup busy for hours. If he isn't ready for a nap when you put him in, he will be after working away on a well-stuffed chew toy for a while. Chew toys keep dogs physically and mentally stimulated and are a wonderful substitute for hunting. Or if you want to tire out your puppy more before the crate nap, try running through some quick training exercises and using a more vigorous playtime as a training reward. Remember, those wild dogs sleep up to 16 hours a day because they're working really hard during the other 8 hours. Give your dog lots of chew toy hunting projects. A tired dog is a happy dog, but be sure to decrease regular mealtime calories accordingly. The crate and the timeout. Yes, you can use a crate for timeouts without causing crate hate. Do you like your bedroom? Sure you do. Even if you don't want to be there on a Friday night, your dog can like his crate too, even if he doesn't want to be there while scheming to scam some chicken off the dining room table. Crates are okay for timeouts because it isn't the crate that is punishing. It is the loss of freedom in the middle of fun times that is punishing. The same reasoning extends to children. They can be sent to their room as a consequence for misbehavior without learning to fear or hate their room. Your dog will only become afraid of his crate if bad things happen while he is in there, so never scold him while he's inside. Timeouts don't need to be long. 30 seconds to 3 minutes is plenty, and don't forget to give your cool hand Luke a clean slate once he's done his time. No grudge holding allowed. The crate as a management tool. The crate is also a terrific tool for the overall management of dogs. Trainers will often divide the plan for fixing a behavior problem into two components, training and management. Training is where you actively work on correcting a problem, like teaching Lola to sit to greet guests at the door instead of jumping up or goosing them. Management is where you avoid the situation altogether, like crating her with a stuffed chew toy when the doorbell rings so that she is physically unable to jump on the pizza delivery man because you are not ready for a training session at that particular moment. With young puppies, we use the crate to manage a whole raft of anticipated problems, such as destructive chewing, nipping at young children, and house soiling when unable to supervise them properly. While crated, they may not be learning all of the good habits we want to teach them, but at least they aren't reinforcing any bad ones. How long is too long? A good rule of thumb is that a dog can be crated overnight and for up to half the day, provided his social and physical needs are being met while not in the crate. Young puppies need more frequent naps and much more frequent opportunities to do their business than adults. A good estimate of how long a pup can wait before needing to relieve himself is as many hours as he is months old, plus one. So a 3-month-old pup can manage for about 4 hours. Overnight, he can usually hold it a bit longer, usually about 1.5 times the daytime maximum, about 6 hours for a 3-month-old. But don't forget that puppies need to be thoroughly socialized before they are 5 months old. So those hours awake and out of the crate are very precious for socialization. How to introduce a dog to a crate. Puppies are introduced to crates quite easily by tossing food-stuffed chew toys inside when they are hungry and letting them work away while someone familiar is nearby. Gradually, they can be left on their own with the door closed, and many will readily go to their crate voluntarily for naps, or in the hopes that a stuffed chew toy will miraculously appear. Adult dogs without any crate experience can be trained to like a crate in the same manner, but it may take longer. And the guidance of a pet behavior counselor is sometimes required if the dog is anxious about entering. A great trick for dogs of all ages is to lock dinner inside the crate until Pooch is throwing a major tantrum, wanting to go inside. Then you can open the door and let him in for his yummy meal. He probably won't even notice when you close the door behind him. What if he is whining to come out? The only whining that should be successfully eliciting crate door opening services with a puppy is if the puppy needs to pee. If you aren't sure, take the puppy out of the crate very matter-of-factly and place him outside. Carry the puppy instead of allowing him to meander at his own speed. If he produces, it was legitimate. If he doesn't, he goes back in the crate for half an hour. He was just whining to come out and needs to learn another way of asking, like sitting quietly. The other exception is if the puppy or dog has an anxiety problem such as fear of crates, separation anxiety, or fear of noise in the environment. If this is the case, seek the help of a professional trainer or a behavior counselor. Otherwise, the rule of thumb for crate whiners and barkers is that they need to be quiet for at least 3 minutes straight before they get let out. Otherwise, they are learning that whining and barking works. And then who is training whom? Next, we're always looking for new ways to save money on pet care. Bark, the Dog Culture magazine, has these budget-friendly tips for dog guardians. 5 Ways to Save Money Without Shortchanging Your Dog by Karen B. London, PhD. Most people aren't trying to spend as much money as possible on their dogs. It just looks that way to anyone who sees a record of their purchases. There's no denying that having a dog can make living on a budget challenging. However, there are plenty of ways to save money without making your dog miss out. Here are a few of my top picks for budget-friendly solutions to canine-related expenses. The first is to create a toy for your stuffing ripper. Dogs who love to shred toys can go through them so quickly that many people stop providing them for their dogs at all. Others end up spending an excessive amount of money buying toys that are essentially single-use disposable items. That's wasteful financially as well as environmentally. Another option is to make a substitute that can be used over and over. Buy a hollow rubber dog toy with a honeycomb shape. Wrap a couple of treats in scraps of fleece or pieces of old t-shirts. Put it inside the toy and then stuff additional fabric scraps around the original treat. How tightly you pack the fabric and how much you twist the pieces around each other determine how difficult it is for the dog to pull out the fabric strips to get to the treats. For safety, watch your dog as she enjoys this opportunity to unstuff a toy to be sure that she's not chewing or swallowing anything but the treats. Another is to make homemade treat pockets for pills. Pill pockets from the store are an amazing invention that have helped countless dogs take their medication with no stress for them or for their people. On the downside, they are not cheap, which is why making your own pill pockets is a terrific budget alternative. The recipe is simple. Combine 2 tablespoons of brown rice flour, 1 tablespoon of milk. You can use almond milk or coconut milk if you prefer, instead of cow's milk, and 1 tablespoon of smooth peanut butter. Be absolutely sure that the peanut butter does not contain xylitol, as it is very dangerous for dogs to ingest it. And some peanut butter does have xylitol. Roll the dough into 9 to 10 small balls and then use a chopstick to make a hole in each. They last about a week in the fridge in a closed container or in the freezer for 3 months. Sure, you can use the old standbys to deliver pills, dabs of peanut butter, or bits of cheese, but these pill pockets are less messy and easier to use. Use walnuts to cover scratch marks. If you've never had scratch marks on your furniture or floors, you are probably not looking carefully enough at your furniture or floors. Most of us, with dogs and cats to be sure, have found that many of our pets don't treat the house as gently as we would like. Luckily, when it comes to scratch marks, there is a much cheaper option than replacing or refinishing, and it is even less expensive than wood-colored pens designed specifically for this purpose. Simply rub a pecan or pecan or a walnut back and forth along the scratch and then rub your finger along the same area. It will look as though you are erasing the damage, but you are actually filling in the hole and with oil and then warming it up to help the wood absorb it. Trade out toys to keep your dog's interest. This suggestion is an old one, but it's too good to leave off the list. Rotating your dog's toys can save you a lot of money because toys she hasn't seen in a long time may be just as good as new to her. Trading out toys weekly and cycling through 3 to 4 sets of them works really well for many dogs. If there are a few toys that your dog is always excited about and continues to enjoy on a daily basis, there's no reason to pull them. Your dog can have those toys all the time. Just rotate the others, and her interest will likely be higher in them when they appear again. It's still advisable to bring in brand new toys regularly, but rotating what she already has means less money spent overall on toys. And parsley for fresh breath and other health benefits. Parsley offers many benefits to dogs, but one of the most popular is fresh breath. Simply sprinkle a little bit of this herb on top of her food. Parsley is antimicrobial, so it prevents bacteria and other germs from continuing to multiply quickly in the mouth. Among the other benefits of consuming parsley are relieving arthritis pain, improving kidney function, and treating gas and indigestion. There's evidence that parsley can help inhibit cancer growth and even lessen the pain from bee stings. Pregnant dogs should not be given parsley, however, as it can stimulate the uterus. There are many products on the market that may help freshen your dog's breath, but none of them are as cheap as parsley, especially if you grow it yourself. Next, 4 summer dangers for cats from Erica Dermer at Catster. Keep kitties summer chill by watching out for these top 4 seasonal bummers. Throughout long and hard winters, summer is the one thing on our minds. I can't wait to feel the sun on my skin, albeit cloaked in sunscreen, and to feel the blood coming back to my extremities. Chances are your cat might be excited about summer too. While outdoor threats to cats are year-round, cats have more dangerous exposure in the beautiful weather of summer when owners can be tempted to let cats wander outside. Catster recommends installing a catio instead. With summer comes danger lurking around every corner, from UV rays to heat stroke and reptiles and insects that bite and sting, along with other animals carrying parasites. Let's look at some of the biggest concerns. First is shedding. With warmer weather, your cat can start to shed a fluffy winter coat to a more manageable, lighter summer coat. This shedding might lead to hairballs or more dire concerns. Lynn Palillo, certified feline master groomer and certified feline creative groomer of the National Cat Groomers Institute, shares that cats can ingest upward of 1/3 of the amount of hair they shed. This can lead to hairballs or vomiting, and even some dangerous blockages that require veterinary care. However, she adds that regular combing, bathing, and grooming removes the hair before it can be ingested, preventing hairballs or more severe issues. While this can make you think about shaving your cat or giving him a buzz cut, cats that live indoors with temperature-controlled rooms don't need haircuts, as long as their excess coat or tangles are regularly removed with brushing. This regular bathing and brushing prevents matting that could lead to overheating. If a cat is already matted or is more prone to matting and does well with haircuts, then a trim done by a professional cat groomer can help with preventive maintenance, according to Lynn. Even for indoor cats, regular brushing, regardless of fur length or type, should be a high priority during these seasonal changes. Second, sunscreen. While you should use sunscreen for pets, it's a little more complicated than buying regular sunscreen off a store shelf. Human sunscreens may contain ingredients harmful to cats. Lynn says that since cats are fastidious lickers, products that are left on the skin should be avoided. While there are sunscreens made specifically for dogs, there isn't one on the market made just for cats yet. Check with your feline veterinarian before using any sunscreen on your cat just to make sure that your brand of choice is safe. Thankfully, the average indoor cat is not at risk for skin damage due to the sun, and sunscreen isn't a summer necessity for your feline friends, unless he just can't stay away from that spot in front of the window, no matter how hot he gets. If you are concerned about feline solar dermatitis, limit your cat's peak sun exposure through any windows or doors where light shines in. Are there any specialty concerns for hairless cats? Lynn adds, hairless cats can have more sensitive skin. Being outdoors is not recommended for hairless cats since they lack protection from sharp branches, sticks, burrs, other critters, etc. Talk to your veterinarian about cat-friendly toxic, non-toxic sunscreen options or a cover-up for hairless cats during summer. Heat stroke. Scorching temperatures aren't just uncomfortable for us. Also think of your cat's exposure to heat too. Heat stroke is a scary thing and can look a little different in cats than you might expect. Cats aren't typically open-mouth breathers, so any panting, similar to that of a dog, is an immediate concern. Also, any lethargy or difficulty walking requires fast-acting vet care. Dr. Heather Lenser of the American Animal Hospital Association adds, you can use warm water, not cold, on a cat's abdomen, ears, and paws, and then turn a fan on them to mimic sweat. Cats, like dogs, don't sweat to cool down, so this method of cooling by a veterinary team or pet owner will be appreciated by the cat. No matter what, go to your vet for further care, even if your cat seems to be acting normally after being overheated. Who's at risk for a heat stroke? Older cats and young kittens, because they aren't as good at regulating their body temperature. Plus, cats with conditions like asthma and kidney disease. Heat stroke signs include body temperature of above 104 degrees Fahrenheit, rapid pulse, rapid breathing, stumbling, lethargy, vomiting, and sweaty feet. Sweaty feet. And bites and stings. What about parasites, bugs, reptiles, and other things that bite and sting? Pet introduction to the outdoors also introduces your cat to parasites, viruses, and bacteria. Note any changes in behavior to your veterinarian, along with any details about accidental outdoor exposure your cat may have, like access to new plants, neighborhood animals, strays, wildlife, etc. As far as fleas, consult with your veterinarian on a good flea control program. Rick Morrison, DVM, warns that simply purchasing a flea control product off the store shelves may be ineffective or even harmful, as some may be toxic to cats. Regularly change the cat's bedding and vacuum frequently to help control fleas, along with veterinary visits and the use of any preventive products. Dr. Lenser adds, seek veterinary care if you think your cat has been bitten by anything with teeth, including snakes, wildlife, and even other cats or dogs. A vet visit can help stop pain and infection from an unknown bite. She says not to treat wounds with topical antibiotics or ointments, as some cats can have allergic reactions to some of the ingredients. Also, they can easily lick off the ointment, making it ineffective and further irritating a wound. Worried about a bite or sting? Although rare, Dr. Morrison notes that cats can have anaphylactic reactions to insect stings. If your cat has swelling of her face, paws, or legs, take her to the vet immediately. The bottom line on summer safety for cats. While it might be a beautiful day, it's easier and safer for cats to stay indoors and watch the season from the safety of your home. Even for indoor cats, always offer shade and plenty of easily accessible water during hot summer months. If you're heading out this summer without your fur friend, keep a list of numbers for emergency veterinarians in your area for your fur sitter. And keep the air conditioning on with the right precautions and preventive measures. Summer can be safe and enjoyable for your feline. And now, for the portion of the program I like to call Don't Eat That. Is vegan cat food okay? From Catster Ellen Rothrock says, given the fact that cats are obligate carnivores, creatures that feed primarily or exclusively on animal matter for their health and well-being, is becoming a vegetarian a good idea? Is vegan cat food okay? A vet weighs in. For cats, it's really inappropriate, says Kaylin Hines, VMD, a board-certified veterinary nutritionist and assistant professor of nutrition at Tufts Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine. The risks of vegan cat food. The risks of feeding cats a vegetarian or vegan diet include inadequate total protein intake, imbalance of animal acids such as taurine or essential fatty acids like arachidonic acid, and deficiency in vitamins and minerals that are obtained ideally or only through meat or other animal products. The health risks associated with vegan cat food and vegetarian cat food. These dietary problems can lead to serious and sometimes irreversible medical conditions, according to Jennifer Larson, DVM, PhD, board-certified veterinary nutritionist and professor of clinical nutrition at the University of California, Davis Veterinary School. The one issue veterinarians mention most often is taurine-related dilated cardiomyopathy, which is enlarged heart with weak contractions and poor pumping ability. But low taurine can also lead to reproductive failures, growth failures, and eye problems, she adds. We did see a case of a cat that almost died as a result of taurine deficiency, Dr. Larson says. The owners were feeding a vegan cat kibble, so a commercially available vegan diet, and they were mixing that diet with cooked chicken breast for some reason, but it was not enough taurine for the cat, obviously, and it resulted in a near-death experience for the animal. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thank you for listening, and please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.